Last week, we chatted with Professor David McAlpine about noise in our lives. Up to 300,000 people in New Zealand with undiagnosed hearing loss, and it can't be diagnosed adequately with the hearing tests we have, or functionally is perhaps a better word to slip in there. We talked about how it affects our hearing, our hearts, our stress levels, noise, how you can go to a Taylor Swift concert, he told us, and if you're unlucky, you'll have tinnitus for the rest of your life. We shan't, of course, go over all that again. The interview's been heavily downloaded and is available to listen to if you Google RNZ Sunday. But you've got questions we didn't ask. Not a typical comment. Hi, Jim. I went to a Bruce Springsteen concert in 2014 and I've had tinnitus ever since. I'm pretty sure it was the supporting band as their sound was much louder and caused me physical pain at the time. I've gotten used to it, sort of. It seems we're getting used to all sorts of noise being inflicted on us more and more, of course, without our permission. Dr. David McAlpine is a globally recognized research leader in auditory scientists. He's the director of hearing research and the professor of hearing, language and the brain at Macquarie University in Sydney. Hello again, David.
Hello indeed. How are you?
Very
good to
well.
Be back.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming back. And obviously, I won't ask you what I've already asked, and I think we covered the territory pretty well regarding noise and noise-cancelling tech, which we talked a lot about. But we've got a few more concerns from listeners, if you wouldn't mind addressing them.
Very happy to do so. It's I would say it's music to my ears, but that might be too cheesy.
Alan McDonald says, I have tinnitus. It is distressing. I listen to radio day and night to distract me from it. That helps. But I would love an actual solution, he says.
All I can say is, Alan, I'm with you. I have tinnitus as well. I don't find it distressing. I do find it changes with various things. Some people find tinnitus distressing and are sometimes called tinnitus sufferers, and some people have tinnitus. And it is a case that cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, has been demonstrated to be a really good technique for overcoming the distress and dealing with the distress that comes with tinnitus. And there are some very good studies now that show something like CBT really does help. Of course, other things like masking it helps. And on the last time I was on the radio here, I had tonsillitis, which then went to be an ear infection. And my tinnitus, since that's cleared up, has been much louder, if I can say it that way, perceived as louder. My blocked ears generated some effect in my brain that said, turn up the internal volume, and my tinnitus has got louder. I'm not distressed by it, but a lot of people are, Alan, and I think the key thing is to seek solutions.
Excuse me asking this, because I know it'll sound, well, I hope it won't sound disrespectful, but when people hear CBT, I'm sure some of them think it's just someone trying to persuade me I haven't got tinnitus, but it's not that.
Correct. It's not, oh, this isn't the problem. It's how you deal with problems. CBT, of course, is used for all sorts of things that are either psychological or trauma-related, or in this perspective, daily living with something that may actually be intrusive when you think about it. So there's no stigma associated with CBT. It's a very common practice. Psychologists are very good at engaging patients with it, and more interest in this from a daily life perspective that we all deal with, where something like cognitive behavioral therapy simply allows us to take control back of something that might be feeling like it's got away from us. And lots of people have been swearing by this. And more importantly, a very strong clinical trial by Lawrence McKenna from University College London and the hospitals there showed this relatively recently, that CBT really is the high-performing intervention. But of course, masking with radio day and night to distract, as Alan suggests, is one other way of doing it. And obviously, you've got a good radio station here. So that's useful as well.
Some consolation to Alan, maybe. Thank you. The interview with Prof. McAlpine on hearing loss was urban in focus. No mention of the milking shed, the wool shed, or chainsaws. How much risk to hearing does he think there is out there in the countryside doing regular work?
Rural and particularly farming communities are extremely loud. Full disclosure, one of my baby brothers is a farmer about 100 kilometres east of Perth in Western Australia, and it's a very noisy environment. He is using lots of machinery, whether it's trucks, chainsaws, he has sheep, so he really does have a high noise environment. The challenge that goes with a high noise environment in the country particularly if you're a small scale farmer, is you're alone most of the time. And not being able to hear and sense your surroundings by wearing hearing protection may actually be a problem. And therefore, you may not be deafening too many other people around you, but you risk yourself, whether you're in the cab of your tractor, using a chainsaw, up on the roof with all sorts of equipment. You just don't want to feel isolated from possible dangers. And also, sometimes wearing hearing protection when you're standing on a roof doesn't give you that sense of where you are on the roof. Are you near the edge? You can hear and feel your spatial position from what you're listening to, and that therefore makes it a danger beyond the hearing loss.
Does that apply to having earbuds in as you walk? I know exactly what you mean about having earplugs in and you're not quite sure of where you are. It's that strange feeling. Does that apply to people walking down the street with their ears totally covered and blasting messages into them?
It does apply. And the louder it is, the more disconnected you are. We've looked at that before with respect to, just as a vox pop, what type of headphones people were wearing. People keep their headphone noises down if they're wearing noise cancelling headphones, so the sound intensity is lower on their headphones, but it still means they're disconnected. And I watched people as I was walking up to Milsons Point train station, up the steps this morning, counting the people coming down from two trains, which are very close together. It's quite a narrow platform, two trains coming in and out every couple of minutes. And 90% of them were wearing headphones or earbuds. And walking near trains, walking with other people, and walking even up and down steps has to engage a lot more of your brain, I suspect, if you haven't engaged or you've disengaged your listening brain. Plus, you've got the attention to whatever you're listening to. Most people aren't listening to noise cancellation passively. They're presenting some other sound on their headphones. So that really does disconnect you. And I would never wear them on a train platform where there are two trains going in two different directions with people moving in and out at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and we don't see the stats on that, the accidents stats on that. So we don't know, but that's really interesting you say that. Owen says, I've been saying for years the noise level at concerts is ridiculous and legally WorkSafe in New Zealand should be prosecuting those operating concerts for hearing damage of more than industrial proportion. Is Owen right? I mean, there's no shortage of regulations regarding noise levels, actually, but are we ignoring some of the danger nevertheless?
Owen is right. The issue will be, and I don't know how well it is actually regulated, or I do know that it's regulated, but how well it's adhered to, is that if you're working at the concert as bar staff, then you should be legally protected. The punter, though, of course, is not. And that's the big issue. I went to a gig about a decade ago now at the Roundhouse in Camden in London to see The Cult, one of my favorite bands from the 80s, still around, still making very, very loud music. And I could only take my earplugs out for my three favorite songs. It was so intense.
Thanks for that clear explanation of hidden hearing loss. It perfectly explains my life. I hear quiet, distant sounds okay, but struggle with face-to-face conversations in noisy environments. Why can't the science be publicised and noise better regulated for everyone's benefit? Mark in Wellington. I suppose he's making the point that we just don't hear enough about this.
Mark's right, we don't. The issue really is that it's difficult already. We already know that getting hearing loss, deafness, onto the agenda is difficult, and getting something that isn't matching the gold standard of the audiogram, and I don't want to traduce the audiogram, but a number of us in the field have started calling it the old standard, because it really isn't fit for purpose now for what people are actually complaining about, this speech and noise, and the muddy sound that you hear, that you're perceiving when you're having a conversation. The trouble is we don't really know what we're supposed to hear. We think, oh, it is muddy or it's blurry or whatever, but we really know that we're struggling a lot more than we used to. And we don't regulate the noise environment. It's very hard to do that.
Yeah, which you mentioned some of last week. Maddie writes, my severe tinnitus disappears if I avoid high histamine foods and common preservatives, sulfates and nitrates in bacon, salami and sausages. If I choose to eat something I love, I take the bad with the good. It's been quite life-changing as I no longer need hearing aids. Have you heard of this phenomenon?
Maddie, it's a good point that you make, because tinnitus does seem to overlap with things we ingest. Some people say coffee or wine, I have maybe 8 or 9 coffees a day. Maybe if I stopped taking coffee, I wouldn't have tinnitus, but then I'd probably have a lot of other problems. But really, we do think about these sorts of issues with diet. And we've recently published some work associated with exploring what dietary things are involved. So my colleague, Professor Bharmini Gopinath, who's a public health specialist, been looking at all these broad range of things, including dietary aspects that may relate to tinnitus and hearing loss. I would say bacon, salami, and sausages also have a lot of salt in them. And one thing we do know about some inner ear things is that they might go awry when we have imbalances in our salt intake. And again, some of that's anecdotal, but some of that is also got a stronger evidence base that high salt diets do have an effect on the inner ear. And whether it's coffee, red wine, or salt, or as Maddie says, maybe high histamine foods. Lots of things that do change your physiology are going to change the delicate balance of everything, and tinnitus manifests as one of those changes potentially.
So, great question, Maddie, for Professor David McAlpine, who's with us. Belinda says, I've asked in clothing stores for the loud music to be turned down. Staff say they're not allowed to. I tell them their hearing is being damaged by the music and to inform their union. Am I right? She asks.
Belinda, good question. And I do think that the surreptitious noise exposure that people put up with is actually damaging. And the loud music in a restaurant or in a clothing store is often there for purposes that are aesthetic with respect to the clientele. But it does get to the point that if you were adding the loud music plus hundreds of customers plus the general din, it's way beyond the sound levels it would require. A restaurant will have music when there are 2 or 3 people in there, so it doesn't feel empty. When there are 100 people, they don't turn the music off, they turn it up. That's problematic. And the same with clothing stores. There's very loud music. It may be cultural that it's bringing in the right crew and clientele who will buy and purchase the clothing gear that's in that type of shop. But it is loud. And if you're in there all day, I can imagine it does have an impact not only on your hearing, but on your sense of well-being.
Yeah. Betty in Dunedin says, I feel the rescue helicopter in my chest before I hear it when it's on its way to the hospital. And I thought that's an interesting point regarding our rest of body reaction to noise, because I assume from what you said last week that if it's only semi-regular, as with, rescue and police helicopters and such, it's fine. Correct me if I'm wrong. But what about construction that reverberates for weeks across suburbs, as happens in our cities? What about living in those houses right on motorways with noise reduction walls in front of them that may not reduce the noise by that much? What about those environments for people? Are they damaging them?
I think there are a couple of points there for Betty. I think, yes, we do have a what we're kind of calling brain in body perspective. So it's not just our listening brain, it's the rest of our sensory systems that tell us about sound. So of course, vibrations, which you pick up as sound, also you pick up within your body. It's part of that low frequency listening, and it changes your vestibular system. So the inner ear balance organs are very sensitive to those low frequency vibrations. So you listen when we say you hear with your ears and you listen with your brain, it's not just your listening brain. It's the rest of your brain has elements of it that actually contribute to your listening experience. When it comes to the reverb, I agree about the reverb. The issue about reverberation is that it builds up the sound level. You get this active building up of sound energy with reverberation, and that, particularly if it's in a constant setting where there's roadworks and there are these noise reduction walls, which may actually not reduce depending on where the construction is, will build up the sound energy. It sort of accumulates on top of itself, and a delayed copy of the sound comes back to you that can be more intense. In fact, in many settings, the amount of reverb that you get is actually much louder than the direct sound coming from the direct source that you're listening to. Reverb and how acoustics works in any setting other than the very narrow settings it's been tested in is a challenge for hearing and listening.
And we get months of major roadworks going on here on arterial routes, and we've got quite a few questions, and I won't get to them all, about noise from construction and vehicles. Reversing alarms on trucks and diggers drive me crazy, says Mike. I remember when they arrived in New Zealand, actually, David, a long time ago, and I can remember how jarring they were. And that's another noise we've simply had to get used to, and I wonder what damage it does.
The perspective on roadworks and diggers and trucks is very apposite because I'm living with it at the moment. Live in a sort of little enclave of a street near the major roadworks is going on until 2026, the Warringah Freeway, and the tunnels are building under the Sydney Harbour. And it's been constant for 18 months. And not only do you get the roadwork noise, what you get is a whole range of trucks and diggers with their noise parking in the street, which should be relatively quiet street, parking in the street and coming in there at 4 in the morning, constant. And so, you know, the whole point about these alarms is that in police, ambulance and fire engines, they were watch out, get out of the way alarms. Now it's everything. It'll be a truck at 4 in the morning that's reversing. There's no one else on the street and they're reversing and they have the lights on and a large beeping sound at 4 in the morning. And for roadworks, and if you're living near major arterial routes, it's constant. And that is a very sleep disturbing perspective, which we know has you know major issues on health. But it's also just the incessant background noise that is now accepted, and you haven't got the... you've got the curtains that keep the light out from these trucks as they reverse with their flashing lights. You don't have very much acoustic shielding, certainly not in Australia, which is the most single glazed country in the world, I suspect, and maybe not in New Zealand, where the sound just penetrates everything.
We talked last week about noise affecting the heart. You see, even if it's not diminishing our hearing loss, I imagine that it's adding up to the stress that builds up in our bodies in urban environments all the time.
It absolutely is the major source of the sort of stress that people are living in urban life. So it's a major source. I mean, everything from the noise that roads make. So there's a question that came through, I think they were talking about electric vehicles, which are quiet, but a lot of noise is about the literally the rubber hitting the road. And we have never found a way of changing that. Why have we not got quieter roads? It's nothing to do with the car engine. It's to do with the sound of a heavy vehicle on a very unforgiving surface. And so trains. I also had someone talk to me this week from somewhere else in Australia about the noise of train braking on major train junctions, which the squealing of those train wheels, bogies on rails, is keeping whole communities in stress. We surely have to have issues resolved for our noise. Otherwise, it's this arms race or ears race, if I can be say it that way. How do we keep the noise down? I mean, if we had a noise reduction act that was effective, we'd probably have fewer headphones being sold. I don't know if there's a market in that.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, I think people suspect that noise has just crept in and up and up. And they've gone through in the correspondence to us all sorts of scenarios, like interesting ones, like some of the new road gravel asphalt mixes produce an incredibly loud noise for us drivers, says a truck driver. And he asks, why? Is there less asphalt? Is there less heavy rolling? Is it the size of the chip? So all that's going on. Teachers have asked about noise in classrooms. Actually, I'll use one of those. From Anne in Auckland, what about teachers? Some classrooms are extremely noisy. And from Alison, please ask Professor McAlpine about modern learning environments in schools. Large open plan classrooms, which have changed a bit now, but have had 100 plus children in them. Is the audio science settled on this?
All good questions about schools and learning environments, particularly because the listening and learning brain is essentially developing at an age when kids are in a faddish new perspective for classrooms. My colleague, Dr. Kiri Mealings here at Macquarie University has explored this as part of her PhD and ongoing about open plan classrooms. Turns out they're awful. Turns out that if you ask kids to guess which word or respond with which word they've actually heard in an open plan classroom, and they might be hat, cat, rat, and bat, 3 meters away from the teacher in an open plan classroom, they're simply guessing. And so that's normal hearing children, but if children have got other issues, if they've got neurodivergence, if they've got glue ear, very common, so, you know, sort of middle ear problems, and youngsters, they're simply getting less effective hearing in open plan. Open plan has nothing to do with any positive listening environment at all. It's a disastrous perspective. The shoebox classroom, which is, you know, old-fashioned, is essentially the best listening environment for kids.
Speaking of the reverb question, and maybe this is the topic we could close on. I mean, I've got so many questions I could ask you, but perhaps we can prevail upon you at some future time in a few weeks' time. But Vicky of Mount Maunganui says, when I was recovering from a severe concussion, I couldn't go into cafes. I found the noise excruciating, the clatter of crockery and the coffee machine. And Alan of Tokoroa says, interesting to hear that continuous loud noise can damage your heart. I've had open heart surgery, and after about 60 minutes of the Warriors match against the Sharks recently, I was feeling stressed from the cacophony of noise, and it included loud drumming when the Warriors were in possession and some of the time when they were defending. And the East Stand was vibrating at times. He's asking how concerned sports fans have to be. I suppose I'm asking how concerned lots of people have to be with full body effects in all sorts of environments. And this is what they're talking to us about.
So whilst we might want to say, well, we want to have those sounds, if the rest of our life has upped the sound level in total so that everything is now loud, we never have respite. And that's the thing I find is probably most problematic. If you leave a stadium and it was noisy, and then you go home and, you know, the roads are noisy, and yes, I take the point that the actual road surface, as you change from one surface to another on a long distance drive, for example, you feel that intense noise you get when you go into a badly surfaced piece of road, or even just a differently surfaced piece of road, is there the whole time. You then get to somewhere where there's no noise damping, and you hear, you may get home and you find that there's trucks outside resurfacing. We never get away from overexposure to noise. So it's now taken that point where our only response is to give more noise and more sound. We wear headphones, which we think, you know, may create a sense of isolation, and we may listen to what we like to listen to, but can also be damaging to our hearing health, making the problem worse. So we really haven't developed that societal perspective that explores those sort of things. And I agree with the comments made by the questioners there. When you've had health issues, where, you know, a concussion, well, this is something they're looking at in the U.S. Department of Defense and the Veterans Administration for people with concussions or a blast injury that didn't kill them, but just sort of they were in a blast, effects on their listening brain that aren't evident in their hearing. Their hearing's fine. They were protected for their hearing in a blast injury, say, as a returned veteran from Iraq, but the concussion of that blast has caused them a listening problem. And people are dysfunctional with respect to their working abilities now in that. And these are people who are not generally of the age that would have been having listening and hearing problems.
Yeah.
So our whole body is listening. And I think that's a key understanding we haven't really caught up to yet in how we design our lives.
Yeah, that's a very important point and a good one to close on. And we haven't got to the people talking about noise and hair salons and the super bass sound systems in cars, but I think we can infer the damage that they probably do. Actually, are those young men doomed? Is their hearing doomed? The ones, you know, the whole car shudders at the traffic lights and they just blast the music out. Is that really bad?
I think if you can hear the low frequencies, that's because they get through things very quickly, easily, of course. So low frequency, long wavelength sounds pass through things. I can imagine the sound inside the car is sufficient to be damaging their hearing in a matter of minutes. And all the frequencies that don't get out because they're higher pitched are inside the car and probably more damaging than the low frequency boom, which of course is very annoying if you're outside the car as well. But the rest of the sound, which is not getting out, is probably the most damaging for them.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Will you come back maybe in a few weeks' time and talk once more? There's still, I think there's still a decent area of noise that we haven't quite discussed.
I'd love to. This is a really, I think, very engaging dialogue on something that most people really aren't getting a handle on from any other source. So very happy to do so.
Thank you. And thank you again for your time this week.
Thanks very much, Jim.